A man is either a master or a slave, and there's no alternative. I have a friend that I don't really know how to describe him because he's a rather interesting individual. He's a very free thinker. Maybe you'd get some idea if I said that he doesn't believe in an 8-to-5 routine, and he believes in going where he wants to go, when he wants to go. Just a bit different. I've always enjoyed his visits. He usually comes and stays for 3 or 4 days. I usually give him a key to the front door and say, well, you know when we eat, you know where the refrigerator is. But I enjoy the thoughts that he has, because in this free life of his, unburdened by the daily routine, which many of us seem to find so oppressive, he has time to think. So one day he was visiting me, and he was telling me about an accident which he had. And I was happy that he wasn't injured, although the car was totaled. And so I told him that I was sorry that he'd had the accident, and he said, well, that isn't all that happened. And I said, oh, what else happened? Well, when I got home, he said, I found my house had burned down. I said, that's terrible. And he said, what do you mean terrible? He said, the angels must have said it. Well, somehow I never thought of the angels as being arsonists. But knowing him, I didn't bother to try to sort it out myself. I simply said, well, okay, let's have it. He said, I'm 47 years of age, and I've accumulated an awful lot of things. And haven't we all? I wonder how many of us can get our cars in the garages. He said, I figured out that it's cost me $400 a month just to keep the rain off of this stuff. It's too good to throw away. It isn't good enough to really sell. And if I had garage sales, it would take a couple of years. So he said, you have no idea what a relief it was. And I drove around the corner, and there was just the charred remains of what had been rather a burden to me. And he said, I collected the insurance and drove off down the road. And he said, you have no idea, just a feeling of weight rolled right off my shoulders. Well, I'm not suggesting that we go home and burn our houses down. I don't think that would be equitable at all or economical. But I would like to point out the fact that too many of us find ourselves in the positions of slaves rather than masters to our possessions. The devil has a real trap here. He holds out the great society, the fuller life. And too often he turns these into traps, making men slaves rather than masters. And God never intended that man would be slave to anything. Notice in Genesis 1, verse 26, he said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion, overseer, superintendent, foreman, caretaker, a person who is responsible for the goods belonging to another person. Notice the point. He's responsible for the goods belonging to another person, and he is accountable for this. Now, Adam was born free, born for magnificence, possessing perfect capabilities, but with the capacity for unlimited development. Would you like to have me run that one by you again? Just think of a person that had perfect capabilities, but with the capacity for unlimited development. Almost boggles your mind. He entered into his work without any prior education, experience, or apprenticeship. And beside this, he had the greatest of all freedoms, which is the freedom of dependence. We normally think of freedom as being independence. And right at this particular time, there are those people who have spent a lifetime keeping up with those interesting people, the Joneses. they have climbed up the ladder of success, always reaching for another level of utopia. And they felt that as quick as they had it made, they had independence. Now they have found out, or had freedom. Now they have found out that not only do they not have freedom, but they are more enslaved the higher up the ladder they get. So there is a movement in many of our large cities with people who are on the top of this economic ladder who are leaving their high-paid jobs, going off into the boonies somewhere, getting a little place, and living off the land, so to speak. And they call this the freedom of independence. But you see, God never intended this to be so. Freedom, true freedom, comes from dependence. Think back to the Garden of Eden and the freedom which Adam had as a steward or an overseer for God. You see, God had created this fantastic world, just teeming with life, bursting with activity. He needed some way to look after it. And that's why he created a man with these capabilities, and Adam had these capabilities. Now notice his freedoms. He had freedom from freedom of choice. He had no housing problems, no medical problems, no employment problems, no social problems. Now that's freedom. I dare say there is no one that wouldn't like to have that today. Just think, get rid of your medical problems, get rid of your employment problems, get rid of your housing problems. That's freedom. He didn't have any unemployment or death benefits because he would never be unemployed and he would live forever. So he wouldn't need these. He was the master of the whole earth. Then along came that old peddler, and Adam lost his job and all the fringe benefits. Now he was a slave instead of a master. Romans 6:16, you remember, says, "Know ye not that to whom ye yield yourselves servants to obey, his servants ye are to whom ye obey." So now he became a slave rather than a master. Note what happened when that man became a slave instead of a master. He was dispossessed from his home. He had clothing problems. He had weather problems, employment problems, and now he needed death benefits. Then God did one of the most incredible things. He offered man a partnership. It is absolutely inconceivable that man, who was bankrupt for all eternity, was now offered by God a partnership. Man is honored, we're told, by being made a co-partner in God's firm. All man would have to give as his share of this partnership would be obedience. Deuteronomy 5:29. "Oh, that there was such a heart in them that they would fear me and keep my commandments always, that it might be well with them and with their children forever." This partnership restores man to the commanding position of control once more, with all the fringe benefits. Using the divine formula of human effort plus divine power, he can be the master over his senses, his emotions, and his possessions, and be absolutely sure of all the necessities of life, food, children, clothing. Now we're back into the freedom of dependence again. Notice, human effort combined with divine power. He can't do it on his own. Neither will God do it for him unless he provides the human effort. But human effort combined with divine power makes him the master over his senses, emotions, possessions, and guarantees him the necessities of life, food, shelter, and clothing. Beside this, he can have a very active role in the plan of salvation. This is a godlike privilege. God has extended the plan of salvation to save men from their sins. Now man has the opportunity of cooperating with God in this fantastic work. The greatest lesson to be taught and to be learned is the lesson of co-partnership with Christ in this great plan of salvation. Unfortunately, Men and women do not avail themselves of this opportunity, and they become slaves to alcohol, to drugs, to other body-destroying practices. But what about slavery to appetite? Fashion? Business? Passion? Unfulfilled desire? I know two men. I knew two men who became slaves to the costly tastes of their families. One man left his chosen profession for a much higher paying job. And I'm sure always had feelings of regret because money wouldn't satisfy his ambition. The other tried to solve his problem through borrowing. He spent his entire life hunting for money to pay off his pressing creditors. He became a virtual slave to debt. The lure of possessions is one of the devil's most successful ways to make slaves out of masters. A few years ago up in Seattle, the men who were driving the garbage truck were astounded when they emptied their load and out with all the garbage tumbled a young man. He'd been in there all night. Somehow he'd crawled in that little hopper. Possibly had too much to drink. And they don't know how it happened, but he had withstood the compressing of this garbage up to 5 tons. They figured he must have been pretty well insulated or padded. At any rate, out with the garbage came the young man. Little the worse for wear. But you see, many of us become slaves to our own environments. We become slaves to possessions. And if we carry it this on far enough and long enough, eventually we may be thrown out with the garbage. If we listen to advertisers today, the good life consists of having at least two of everything. I recall opening the little drawer in a motel one day, checking for the telephone book. And the thing that greeted my eye was a gold-colored little folder. And it said, have two TVs, have twice as much fun. And there was the advertisement. And so I came to the conclusion that if you had five, you'd have five times as much fun, and 10 would give you 10 times, etc. But have you ever stopped to consider this, that possessions require payments, insurance, maintenance, and housing. And with the superabundance which Americans possess today, it's little wonder that many warehouses are in such great demand. I guess the garages and the attics won't hold anymore. In this intense age, we need to weigh the things of earth on the scales of eternity. We need to come to Christ, for he says, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. We who labor and are heavy laden need to find rest into our souls. I'll have to call him Chuck. It's not his real name, but it'll be close enough. I was holding meetings in the church one night, and as I looked down over the audience, there was a young man caught my eye. Well, with a pair of red pants and a red plaid shirt, I could hardly miss him. But I hadn't seen him there before, and I was curious all during the time I was talking. Who is he? Where did he come from? So as I made my way at the door following the meeting, I was waiting for him to come out because I wanted to meet him. He introduced himself, and I told him that I was happy that he was there, and I'd like to visit him. And he said, I'd like to have you visit me. And so I reached in my pocket to pull out my pen and a piece of paper, and I said, what is your address? And he said, the county jail. And I said, the county jail? And I began to wonder about our penal system about that time. Yes, he said, you'll find me there. So the next day, the pastor and I went to the county jail. I said to the jailer, is Chuck in? And he said, wait, I'll see. I looked at the pastor. He looked at me. After a while, he came and said, yes, he's here. So we had to sign a book, and then he took us into a little place, and there were two chairs, there were bars, And then on the other side was a single chair, and pretty soon Chuck came in. Well, he reached his hand too. We shook hands. And I think I have some fair idea what a pastor is supposed to tell a person in jail. Hold out the Bible truths of a better life. Urge them to give up this life, that there is no freedom here. We didn't have a chance to say anything. He did all the talking. You see, he had found Christ one day, and he was full of his subject. And the pastor and I just sat there and listened. All of a sudden, this man said, "You think I'm in jail?" I thought he was. "No way," he said. "Even in solitary confinement," he said, "I'm free as a bird." You know why? Because I found Jesus Christ. We had prayer, and as I got ready to leave, I said, "Chuck, can you go out for dinner?" After all, I had seen him at the meeting, and he said, "Sure." And I said, "Wednesday, I'll pick you up." He said, "Okay." So on Wednesday, we were back there, and I asked the jailer if Chuck was in. He said, "Wait, and I'll see." And he came back with the news, and I said, "Could we take him out to dinner?" And he said, "Certainly." So pretty soon, we had to sign. I didn't see Chuck sign anything, but we had to. We got into the restaurant, and I said, finally, "Chuck, how did you ever get in jail?" Well, he laughed and said, "That's an interesting story." He grew up in a little coastal town where his family were totally irreligious. His father was a drunkard. He and his father and his brothers and all his relatives were always in trouble with the law. And he said, "When I became old enough, they sent me to the reform school." When he became old enough. So he had gone from one reform school to another reform school, still another one. And finally, he had graduated from the McLaren School for Boys. That is the high school for incorrigibles. He wasn't out of there too long till he went down to see his brother-in-law. And they got into a little drinking bout and needed some more liquor and ran out of money. So they went down and held up a service station. And, of course, both of them were soon in the penitentiary. There, because he was a rather feisty person, this Chuck was always in fights and found himself in solitary. And so he spent a lot of days down in the dark hole with practically no light. And one day he said, this had been going on for a while, and one day he was sitting down in this hole all by himself, nothing to do but think. And he said, "Chuck, you're stupid. What are you doing down here? You're stupid." So he said, "I started to pray. I said, I don't know whether there's a God or not, but if there is, if you're out there, won't you help me?" I'd heard somebody talk about it, but I only used it in swear words. "If you're there, will you help me?" So he said, as quick as I got out of solitary, I decided that I was going to get out of prison. And quite obviously, going over the wall or under wasn't the answer. I'd seen some fellows try that. So he said, I decided that I knew how to do it. Good behavior. So I became the model prisoner. And, of course, the authorities are trying to rehabilitate people like this. And so they were amazed when they saw this radical and sudden change in Chuck. They felt now that their system was working. All he wanted to do was get out. But he was so successful in this facade that eventually when the parole board met, his name came up and he was placed on parole. But there were two conditions. Couldn't get drunk. Had to stay away from his brother-in-law. A bad influence. Well, he went home. They had a big reunion. Everything's fine. Went along about a month. All of a sudden, he gets to thinking about his brother-in-law. He's got to go see him. So down he goes to see his brother-in-law. Another drinking bout, another service station job, and now he's in court. He's caught again. And the judge said to him, "Look at your record. I have it all before me. You have been in trouble with the law ever since you could walk. Look at it." He said, "Look at what we have tried to do. He said, everything inside of me says to declare you an habitual criminal and put you away for the rest of your life because you're a menace to society. Everything tells me to do it, but somehow I'm being held back and I don't know why. I'm just not using good sense, but I'm going to sentence you to a term. I'm not going to declare you a habitual criminal. Now he's back in jail again. And there he sits. And he gets to thinking. Now, many people think that nature is God. But nature is the created work of God, and God speaks to us through nature. Notice how he spoke to Chuck through nature. He said, when I was back in the penitentiary, I got to thinking about the green grass, the leaves on the trees, and the birds. I never noticed them before. Grass, that was something you ran across or ran your bicycle across. Leaves, I guess. Birds, I shoot at those. I never noticed them before. I had never heard a bird sing, not consciously. I didn't know how green the grass was. Now he said, I've got to get out of here. I've got to get my feet on that green grass. I've got to see those beautiful leaves. I've got to hear those birds sing. I've got to get out of here. Good behavior isn't going to do it. No way. So one day, he noticed on the bulletin board they were going to have some meetings in the prison chapel on Sunday. So he signed up to go. It would be different anyway. And he went there and they gave him a Bible, which was probably one of their mistakes. He didn't have anything to do, so he read it. 2 or 3 weeks later, on a Sunday, he went to one of the meetings, and after the meeting, they had a little fellowship. And so he went up to a man, and he said, what day do you keep for the Sabbath? And the fellow said, Sunday. He said, man, you don't know what the book says. He said, you don't have anything for me. You haven't even read the book. Went over to another man, got the same answer. But in among these businessmen who were holding these Sunday services was one Seventh-day Adventist businessman. And when he came up to him, he said, what day do you keep? He said, the seventh day. He said, I want to talk to you. As a result of this, he had Bible studies. The man was able to take him to pick him up at penitentiary, take him to Sabbath school and church, take him home for dinner where he introduced him to other young people, and he had to be back at 5 o'clock, I remember. And before long, they put him on a work release program. And he was out in this particular little town in the county jail, and that's how I met him. The reason I met him was because this particular night he was reading his Bible about the subject of baptism, and he became confused. He didn't know what to do. He became so confused, finally he said, Lord, what is it all about? He couldn't read anymore. Put his Bible away, asked the jailer if he could go for a walk for a couple of hours, and he said, go ahead. Went down one street, down another street, down another street, and pretty quick he saw a church with lights. Wondered what they were doing. Walked into the church, and that is the night we presented the subject of baptism. Chuck isn't in jail anymore. He's free as those birds that he was talking about. Just as free. He has a nice wife and a lovely little girl. I saw him, his face just simply beaming. I said, how's everything? This was a couple of years later. Beautiful, he said. Just beautiful. He said, how could it be any other way when you have the freedom that's in Jesus Christ? That's what God wanted us to do. God didn't want us to be slaves to those little sins that gnaw away at the edges of our consciences. He didn't want us to get up all tight trying to make a living. He didn't want us to worry about the future. That's why he sent his son Jesus, so we wouldn't have to be slaves. So we could be masters. Not only here, but in that wonderful place he has prepared. But today we stand where Adam stood. Because Jesus Christ died on the cross of Calvary, paying our debt to the law, making provision for our salvation, but more important today, to guarantee us once more the power to choose. And today we have this choice. We can either be slaves or masters. And there is no alternative.